How was this airplane to fly?
Well, you know, the P-39's got a bad rap, I think. They were, allegedly, they would tumble. They go S over tea kettle. I never tumbled one, and I thought it was a fun airplane to fly. The thing had this marvelous new tricycle landing gear. It made takeoff and landings and taxiing, piece of cake. And as you can see, it has automobile-type doors that fold forward, and it has a crank in there so you can crank the window up and down. It's pretty unusual. You could taxi out for takeoff with your arm out the window if you wanted to, but nobody did that.
Kind of like cruising down the yeah. street.
And it did have an FCG because the engine is mounted in the back to leave this nose open for a cannon system. And I think, who was it? We asked the Bell test pilots after the war, would the P-39 tumble? And they said, no, we tested it as hard as we could to make it tumble. But it certainly did have some unusual post-stall gyrations. So I think it's only in the terminology, maybe.
Right. There's a little red airplane over here. What is it?
Well, that's a civilian Culver Cadet, and the Army Air Corps had some of them. They were called Q-14s, and they had a little autopilot system in them. And they were artillery targets. You could take them out and fly along, and they'd shoot at it.
Huh. So how much training did you do with that?
None. But after the war, we did some flight testing with that airplane. Huh. And I saw it here in the museum. And we checked the serial numbers and all that, and actually have a letter from Wright Field saying, this airplane's on loan to you, but keep it in good flying condition because it might be needed again. I hope not.
So you ship out to England, you're flying P-39s. When did the Mustangs come to you?
As we were going over to England, somewhere in there, we heard we're going to get the P-51 Mustang, and that would be the B models. And I don't know exactly when that was, but when we got over there, yeah, sure enough, we're going to fly these airplanes. And we had never seen one, let alone fly one. And so we kind of checked ourselves out in the theater.
How many hours did you get transitioning in the P-51? How many hours did you get to fly before you flew it in combat?
Well, again, I'm a lucky guy. When I got there, they said, hey, we were starting to get our airplanes. And they said, hey, bud, you're going to be the group gunnery officer, so you're going to go to the Royal Air Force Central Gunnery Instructor School, and they flew early Mark I, Mark II Spitfires. But they said, hey, you take a P-51 with you. And so I got 35 hours in the Mustang. Some people were lucky to go around the pattern once or twice.
Just go around the pattern a few times and then go fly it in combat?
Yeah. It sounds terrible. Probably is. We didn't even have handbooks for it. But, you know, our guys had, say a high time guy like me, 700 hours total. Quite a bit in the P-39, hundreds of hours. And another guy, new guys, might have 500 total time, something like that. And transitioning to another fighter is not that big of a deal, but sure would have been nice to fly it a little bit more, right. And have a manual tell you what it is supposed to do.
Now, you flew your two tours in 1944. How significant was the Mustang in Europe, and why?
Well, I think there's two factors of the P-51 and General Jimmy Doolittle are the two factors that were significant in the war in Europe, the air war in Europe. And what we had to do, we had to defeat the Luftwaffe before we could have the invasion. That was mandatory. And the 8th Air Force was run by bomber pilots when we got over there, and they said, we want you, the bombers are here. They say, we want you right here. We want you around us. We want to see you. It really wasn't the way to do it. And they said, if the enemy comes in, you must drive them away and then come back. We actually had an altitude, 18,000 feet. If you hadn't shot them down, you had to break off and come back up. It was not the way to do it, but that's what we did. And then when General Doolittle got there, well, first of all, the Mustang was there, and what it had was tremendous endurance. It could go anywhere we wanted to go, the bombers wanted to go in Northern Europe. And we could escort them in, escort them out. And that, plus General Doolittle changing the ground rules for combat. He told us now, he said, once you engage the enemy, You're cleared to follow them into the ground and until you kill them. Pursue and destroy. And I think most historians agree that the spring of 1944 is when we broke the back of the Luftwaffe. And General Eisenhower announced to the ground troops, if you see an airplane overhead on D-Day, they're friendly. Yeah. And that meant we did, and that's pretty much what happened, and that meant we did a good job at that. And well, we did it by killing their experienced pilots, not blowing up the factories and airfields and things like that. We did blow them up, but I mean, the significant thing was we killed a lot of their very experienced pilots.
If there was such a thing as a typical day, a mission day, what would a mission day be?
Well, it depends. Did we see combat that day or not?
Yeah. How often did you see, when you flew, how often did you actually see German airplanes?
I don't know. I'd have to research that.
But not every time you flew?
Oh, no. Especially later on. Later on, we'd go days after days after days and not see any. And then when we did, we'd see hordes of them, you know, hundreds. They were saving their fuel and pilots and things like that, and they'd make a last stand kind of a thing.
Right. What was their technique? If you were flying near the bombers, above the bombers, where?
Well, after Doolittle, let's say,
right.
Yeah, we still kept, the bombers ran in this huge column. There'd be about a bunch of 60 and then another 60 and another 60, as far as you could see. And days when they're pulling the contrails, we made our own overcast over there. And so we would put some airplanes zigzagging over the top of them to try to keep your speed up. And that let some of the other airplanes go out and try to find these very big formations and break them up before they got to the bombers. And it was a pretty good way of doing it. Although we lost a lot of bombers and a lot of fighter pilots.
Did you have days when you shot down more than one airplane?
Mm-hmm. I got a couple of doubles and at least one triple, maybe two. Yeah.
There's that figure in your 16 and a quarter, and the one quarter, I wonder how you shoot down a quarter of an airplane.
Well, you got the wingtip, and you got the engine.
How did that come about?
No, you shared it with, if you have a half or a quarter or whatever, it means you shared it with other people. And we were in a big dogfight with ME-109s up with the bombers, and we had taken them down to the ground. And while we were dogfighting, I saw a shadow, situational awareness. That's a good thing about a great fighter pilot, if you can keep track of what's going on when it's crazy. And we finished off the Germans, and I said, hey, get up here, we got a, I think I saw a shadow over here, and he was going west. Come on up and get in formation. And sure enough, pretty soon I saw, it was a very bright day, about like this, I guess, and everything was green. And I actually saw the shadow again before I saw the airplane. He was hugging the ground, but he was making a shadow right here. And I looked up, looked around, there's nobody around, said, oh boy, there's an easy kill, you know, just an old Heinkel, an old twin-engine, obsolete Battle of Britain bomber. And I'm thinking, oh boy, this is going to be wonderful. And then I thought about the guys that flew with me. And a wingman don't get to shoot very often, not in my flight anyway. And I thought, okay, this, we're going to share this on everybody. And I told them, hey guys, get in a practice gunnery formation. And that meant, they knew what that meant immediately. They're going to get to participate. And I said, you never saw four guys get into a echelon left so fast in your life. Anyway, I made the first pass. They had a gunner. We got one engine burning, the other one smoking. And he finally crash landed into a field up there. And that's how you get a quarter of a kill. I scored a mole.